Hello, everyone. This is Premier Chess CEO, National Master Evan Rabin, and I'm excited to be here on episode 204 of the Premier Chess podcast, where every single week we interview people who have found their passion, whether it be being a chess master, being a lawyer, being a nonprofit executive like Rachel, our guest this week, or anything else. But there are people who typically left corporate to find their passion. So Rachel actually is the founder of Pause New York, which she's been running full time since 2012. Before that, she was in development at the ASPCA. And Pause New York is a great organization that I've actually volunteered for myself. In the past, they actually allow senior citizens and other disabled people to basically keep their pets as they get volunteers to pet sit for them, walk them, take them to vet visits, things like that. And she's been named the New Yorker of the Year by New York One, the Hero by the New York Times, among many other titles. And she went to the University of Michigan. So, go blue.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my sincere pleasure. So, my brother actually is a Michigan alum. So I have been to Ann Arbor a couple of times.
Nice.
It was a good time there. So,
yeah.
What's your favorite thing about the University of Michigan?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard question. I enjoyed my time in Ann Arbor so much. Amazing city, and the people are all great. And I mean, it's hard to narrow it down, but obviously the friendships I made in college were, some of the best friendships I've ever had. And it's just, there's something about Ann Arbor that is just really special. Like, I can't even put it into, it's a great college town. So, yeah.
So you went to Jiggerman's and, the big house.
Definitely. Every weekend walking to the big house was very fun. I was never a huge football fan, but when you go to a school like the University of Michigan, you sort of have to become one. So it's part of the culture there, and was great. Zingerman's delicious. I think it still exists, but I very much enjoy getting quesadillas from a place called Pancheros, which is like a staple in Ann Arbor. Really delicious late night food. So, yeah.
Interesting. It's a wonderful place. I don't think I've actually been to Pancheros. So,
if I you got it. Mm-hmm. You have to get out. You know what? It's a similar type of vibe to Chipotle. You go in and you pick the different things that you want and they make it for you. It's like fast food, but fresh ingredients and it's great. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, my brother, I don't think it's there anymore, but at some point I'll definitely get there and check it out. So so tell me, it started this organization after working full time for the ASPCA, obviously also in the animal nonprofit world, but what made you really decide to start Pause New York?
Yeah, so I've been an animal lover my entire life. To be honest, never thought that I would actually be able to, make working with animals, figure out how to make that my career. Becoming a vet, which is sort of the thing little kids always say they want to be when they grow up, if they love animals. I think I slowly realized while in school was not going to be the future for me, because I science was never my strong suit. But I love animals. My parents actually met walking dogs in New York City, had pets my entire life. And then I was right after graduating University of Michigan, my plan was to go to law school. And so I worked at a firm for 2 years right after graduation. Great experience, great people. But I realized that, law was maybe not the right path for me, and started to think about what I was really interested in and what I, you know, what I thought my career path should really be. And I started to think about, you know, giving back and trying to, you know, the nonprofit sector. And I decided to go and pursue my master's in public administration at NYU. And while I was there, while I thought I was going to, you know, focus more on public policy, that aspect of the program, I was really drawn to the nonprofit management side of things. And it's while I was in school that I realized, you know, wow, I can actually bring back my passion for animals in this way, because I can look at animal welfare organizations and the ASPCA, you know, in my mind was sort of like, that was the goal. Work at the ASPCA. I love animals. They're an amazing organization. There are many amazing organizations, but that's the organization that I was really familiar with. And so I was in school, taking all of these, you know, nonprofit management courses, nonprofit law, and I would walk to class. I lived near the campus, and there was a homeless couple and their dog that I saw almost every single day sitting outside of a grocery store near the Union Square area of Manhattan. And, you know, I realized homeless shelters don't allow a pet. And what this probably meant was that this couple was giving up a warm bed at night because of the love and bond that they shared with their animal. And, you know, being an animal lover myself, I thought, you know, that's heartbreaking. Like, what can I do to help, you know, donate change, donate pet food? But I thought, you know, I'm not really making a long-term sustainable impact. I'm like helping in the short term, like today, this is helpful, but what can I be doing to really, you know, make an impact? And I started to think about, you know, who else lives in this big city of ours, has pets, loves them, benefits greatly from their relationship, but who are struggling on a day-to-day basis with, you know, basic care. And I immediately started to think about older adults, you know, as you get older, you know, as you age, it might become harder and harder to get outside, to walk your dog, to bend down and scoop the litter. Some of the simple things that for those of us who are, you know, younger or healthier or not experiencing obstacles to care, we might not think twice about. But for somebody who has a pet and now is in a situation where they're struggling, like that's an awful situation to be in. And you think, you know, maybe I have to give up my pet, and not because I don't love them or want to be with them, but because I just don't think that I can give them what they need. And so I did some research and really could not identify any organization that existed in New York City that provided the kind of assistance I had in mind, which was like ongoing physical care. Yes, there are financial needs as well, vet care, pet food, those are financial burdens, but I was really thinking about starting from the physical assistance. And so that homeless couple and their dog that I would see frequently was really the inspiration for me to think about, you know, pet care and the relationship we share on like a much larger scale. And so I just slowly started the organization, you know, did a lot of research, you know, tried to figure out what I wanted to create, and then, you know, kind of slowly built the organization over time. And I was lucky enough to graduate from my program and get a job at the ASPCA. And I did fundraising for with them for almost 4 years, and nights, weekends, lunch break, I was building PAWS, and then was fortunately able to make the transition to PAWS full time in 2012. So
that's amazing. And, you know, one thing that it reminds me of after the previous podcast episode with Pastor Bill Wilson, who's the founder of Metro World Child, one of my other favorite nonprofits. You know, he was actually crazy 50 years ago, picked up on a street corner after 3 days after his mother left him. And, you know, basically fast forward now, he has 250 people working for him. They're working with 200,000 kids all around the world. You know, he literally just got back from Ukraine, and he's been shot 4 times and different places. He's been, you know, there more than I could imagine. I actually met him through his executive assistant, Blissed Newcook, who's a good friend of mine, actually currently down in South Africa and launching some more programs for them down there, where Bliss is actually from. But basically, the reason I said that is, You know, he basically called everyone out. You know, he basically said that, you know, so many people, like, you know, you and him and others, you know, like, want to do certain things, but they won't actually, like, take initiative, you know, to do it. So people like yourself and him that, you know, actually start something, is important. You know, we do have, like, a nonprofit arm. You know, we work with my friend Teresa Grant's nonprofit, Make a Difference, out of Africa once a year, where we you know, bring a team of chess teachers, you know, down there. Teresa, of course, has been on the podcast as well. But, you know, it's a nonprofit owner. You know, it's not like, you know, full-time, you know, in terms of what we're doing. So,
That's amazing. But, you know, I can understand, you know, it's easy to understand, you know, people, you know, you have ideas and then you don't necessarily, you got to find the right people to surround yourself with, because, you know, unless you've started a bunch of nonprofits and you've, you know, kind of gone through the process, it's overwhelming. And like, a person will not have all the skills and experience necessary to do it on their own, right? It definitely takes a team. It takes finding the right people who have strengths and training that you don't have, and being able to identify your own sort of weaknesses is a really important part of the process, I think. So I get it. It can be overwhelming, but I'm glad I'm still here today. And like, I'm amazed at just this incredible community of New Yorkers that we have, who make our work possible every day, like our volunteer network, you included, obviously, as you mentioned, you're one of our volunteers. I mean, you're the ones who are going out every day and doing this work for us. So we're very grateful.
And by the way, I thought I mentioned, but the only reason I haven't been even so active is I recently rescued a dog. Brian was actually sitting here with me in the office at WeWork. Yeah, I got him actually through Wagging Tail Rescue, actually thanks to my friend Allegra, who kind of introduced me to the organization. But he's amazing. And I got engaged last week to Stacey Ehrlich, and she had a golden retriever, so now we have two dogs together.
Gosh. Awesome. That's so exciting.
So speaking of which, that was like just kind of one thing I was like curious about when I was reading your bio earlier. You have obviously you love cats, you love dogs, you love all animals. But I noticed you have one cat, Milo, and no dogs. Is that any reason you never like took a dog with your own? Or at least currently?
Yeah, you know. we had two cats. My older cat, Wiley, unfortunately passed away last year. He was 17. Milo is getting up there in years. He is 14. My husband, who is very involved with the organization, is highly allergic to animals. Not just itchy hives, but like asthma. So we actually can't have any more pets at the moment in our house because it's a real, health concern. But you know, when we met, I already had Wiley, then Milo. Actually, it's interesting, the very first intake I did with a prospective client when I was trying to create this organization, so it was early days learning about what we needed to do, my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, he went with me to do the intake with this client in Brooklyn. And the client had two cats and they were running around the house having so much fun. And he said, and my husband said to me after, you know, that those two cats, they were having so much fun. And he was joking around and he said, you know, Wiley would probably love to have a friend. Well, 2 minutes later, we're walking back to the subway and this little kitten with a crooked tail who's limping comes out from behind a gate and just stops in front of us and meows. And we both were like, okay. So we looked around. He definitely was not somebody's pet. There was somebody on the street we were speaking to who said, you know, that he had seen him around. So we rescued him, took him to an emergency vet, got him checked out. And, you know, he's still with us today. And he's a wonderful cat. You know, maybe one day in the future we'll be able to get a dog, but right now we've got as much pet dander in our house as we can safely maintain.
Yeah. So, of course, everyone has their limitations with allergies, big things like that. I guess, one thing that I was also curious about, you said you tried to practice law briefly, you were going to go to law school, you did it. It does actually remind me of another podcast guest of mine, my rabbi, Mark Wallace, who actually did go to law school, did actually practice law for a couple months, essentially. His brother and father are actually both immigration attorneys, but shortly thereafter, he basically founded the Manhattan Jewish Experience, great organization where he ran events for Jews in their 20s and 30s. I'm actually currently in their fellowship program. Did you have any pushback at all, when you were looking to start this and, just from family and others that might have, wanted you to continue a legal path or something else?
Yes, I would say, there's some pushback. I was, pretty young at the time. And I had, first of all, I had a great job at an organization that, previously was my dream place that had, good benefits and was security, a place I could be at forever. So obviously sort of leaving that to basically take a risk on pause was not an easy decision for me to make as somebody who is typically very risk averse and overthinks everything. And I certainly had, had questions and concerns from loved ones, but ultimately, this is something I was really passionate about. And if it didn't work out or, it was the wrong decision, I could always make a change. But, in my opinion, the only way for this organization to succeed was for me to give it 100%. There's no way I could do that and stay working somewhere else. That's not giving the clients and the that were already in our program when I was doing it part-time the best chance, right? And I was committed to try, doing everything I could and seeing it through. And if it didn't work out, it didn't work out, but at least I tried. I will also say, in the early days when I was kind of doing research and talking, there was an organization that I spoke to who had started a small program, and they basically said to me, it's impossible to raise money for this. You're not going to be able to raise money. And it was really discouraging. And what I found was that it's a challenging cause to raise money for because we don't fit neatly into animal welfare or human services. So for funders who focus on animal welfare at the time, things are certainly changing at the time. Those groups were really focusing on spay neuter initiatives, adoption, food and shelters, that sort of thing, TNR, this sort of surrender prevention, which is kind of what we do. It's sort of a term for the kind of work was really not a thing yet. And so it wasn't top of mind for a lot of people. I've seen a lot of really positive changes over the last 10 years, really starting to look at, pet pantries and providing these surrender prevention program support is really critical in keeping pets at home and out of the shelter in the first place. And then for human services, we're helping human clients by allowing them to keep their animal companions, which is beneficial for their health. Especially for our clients who are really isolated and are often living alone with little support, if any, from friends and neighbors and family. But we are not, again, we don't fit neatly into that box because we're not providing food and shelter for the human, right? We're not. So it's been a challenge. And what I've learned over time is that, what we do doesn't change, but how I talk about it does, right? So am I focusing on the benefits to the person? Am I focusing on the benefits to the animal? Or am I focusing on both, which is what I would ideally like to talk about? And so I have to kind of tailor my pitch based on who I'm talking to to make sure that it can resonate with them. And again, like I said, I've seen really positive trends since I started the organization where people are seeing more of these types of programs. So now it's not so different and unheard of, which is great.
Mm. So yeah, it makes me actually think, you know, honestly, to relate it to Chest a little bit, you know, I think you have to be preemptive. Anatoly Karpov, a former world champion, is actually famous basically for the term Karpovian, you know, which literally means to kind of prevent threats before they actually happen. So yeah, there's obviously a lot of great, you know, rescues like Riley Dales that I adopted from. I actually got Riley, who's actually rescued with 50 other dogs on a truck from Tijuana, Mexico. Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said that, before, dogs should even be rescued, you should figure out how you could, get their owners to, keep them in the first place, which is sort of what you do.
Yeah, when I worked at the ASPCA, one of the aspects of my job was to take donors around the animal shelter and show them around so they could see, some of the animals and get a sense for that aspect of their work. And what I would see, there's cage cards, right? At all shelters, there's usually a cage card that gives you some information. Right. And one of the pieces of information is, where did the animal come from? Was it a stray? Was it? And so often it would say owner, guardian, surrender. And in some cases that surrender, maybe it wasn't preventable, for various reasons, but in a lot of cases it could be, somebody who might, maybe they, just received a cancer diagnosis, they're going through chemo and they just can't manage their animal. Right. Or, that's like an example of like, what can we do to make sure that something like that doesn't happen when you need your pet the most, right? Like when you need that love and affection and companionship the most, that somebody has to give up their pet, like that is what we are trying to avoid at all costs. In some cases you can't prevent it, but what you can do is give as much support as you can to lengthen that time that they are together, and make that time, as positive for both the human and the animal.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's great to, kind of constantly move forward. So if there's any lessons that you learned in the last, several years, running, the nonprofit that maybe you wish you learned prior, what would those be?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. That's hard to answer. I mean, for me, my wish is that, our organization and so many others wouldn't even need to exist, right? If everybody just, thought a little bit about helping their neighbors, everybody just pitched in just a little bit. I'm just thinking about our clients, for example. We're supporting them because they don't have support from other people, but we live in New York City. Most people live in buildings with lots of neighbors. And there are so many amazing and good people in our city, but sometimes we also get so focused on what we're doing, and just to help somebody, just to offer help to that neighbor. Or if you see somebody on the street who's struggling to, carry their groceries or something like that, just like offer your hand. That to me, and I've noticed that with our volunteer network. I mean, we have about 3,500 people who've come through training over the last, decade plus. And these are like the most amazing people I've ever met. And what they do for our clients is so, so incredible. And I guess I'm just reminded how like good people are, because it is so easy to forget that sometimes, especially in the world that we're living in now, where there's so much tragedy, that there are still, good, kind people. And doing this work, I am reminded of that more often than I think I would be if I were doing something else every day, you know? And so I often have, you know, read an email or hear a message from a volunteer or a client, just puts a smile on my face, you know, to know that we're really making a positive difference. And again, like I said, I mean, we wouldn't be doing it without our volunteers. I mean, you know, people are giving up their free time to help a neighbor, and it's like a beautiful thing.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, one thing interesting you said, you know, that, you know, the truth is that, yeah, there shouldn't be a need necessarily for some of these nonprofits, but, you know, essentially there is, you know. Actually, Rabbi Weil, as I mentioned before, when I went to actually said, like, look, if things like intermarriage didn't exist, there wouldn't be as much of a need for, you know, organizations like MV. But the truth is that, you know, it does. So, you know, that's one of the main reasons that, you know, there's a good
deal.
And by the way, I did actually meet my fiance through MJE a few months ago. So,
that's great.
MJE's Shabbat dinner. So the MJE's Rabbi Abby Heller was organ woman, actually. So, very grateful, you know, to that. You know, really, you know, props to, you know, all that, you know, you do. And I know that you also have a gala coming up actually in a few weeks. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, we're hosting an in-person fundraiser for the first time since spring 2019. So we are excited. It's Monday, May 23rd from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at Monarch Rooftop, which is on West 35th Street. And cocktail party, hors d'oeuvres, silent auction, and it will be a great night. I think finally celebrating together after such a long period of time, raising money. You know, last year, you know, because of the pandemic, we had a really tough year financially, as I'm sure almost every nonprofit had, you know, because lost some funding, not being able to hold in-person events. There just wasn't as much revenue to be able to come in because of loss of some of these opportunities. And so we are just really excited to have this opportunity to gather together in person. The space is indoor, outdoor as well, which is great because of COVID, having that, that airflow and having guests be able to be outside. Is something that was important to me. And we would love for as many people to come as possible. And, you know, every dollar that we raise at this event is going to go directly toward supporting pets and keeping them at home with the people who love them. So, you know, there's information about that on our website.
I believe I saw there was also an option to bring pets.
It's a pet friendly event. We are limiting the number of animals just in order to like reduce sort of the chaos and all that. So there's a limited number of pet tickets. But we do still have some remaining, and the lucky pups that attend will also get a sort of a VIP pet gift bag as well. So we want the pets in attendance to be spoiled. So it'll be great. I'm really excited about it. You know, I think people are ready to start kind of getting back out there again. We are at this time going to ask for proof of vaccination in order to protect. We're gonna have a lot of clients in attendance and also just our guests in general. That's subject to change, but probably won't. So I do want to just say that, but that's also written on our website. So if there are any policy changes, you know, we'll certainly announce that, but
well, we are very excited. It's definitely, you know, better to stay safe and it should be a great event.
To
be personally about maybe going with Stacey and Raven and Maxie.
Would be great.
A good time, you know, so definitely check it out. Speaking of galas, I did want to, you know, quickly mention, I was just talking to another one of our podcast guests, Andy Stein, who runs a great, also nonprofit, Orphan Starfish Foundation, They also have an in-person gala coming up a little later, actually, in I believe September. Don't have the exact date offhand, but yeah, you know, he was actually, you know, being very frank the other day, saying something similar. You know, it's definitely a time that was, you know, a little bit of a struggle, you know, for a while, but you know, they're fully back in action, and yeah, there was a big gala at Cipriani's in New York. September. So September or October, I don't have a date in front of me, but look for it. Arkansas Foundation as well. You know, I met Andy Stein a year ago, actually, through our other podcast guest, Christopher Hunt. We did a big Wall Street fundraising conference last year down in Florida. So, really wanted to, you know, thank you for, you know, taking the time to chat, you know, talking about really a variety of subjects from hotspots in Harbor to physical care for pets. you know, overcoming pushback, surrender protection, preemptive moves, lessons about nonprofit management, and of course your upcoming gala that definitely recommend everyone attends. Of course, the link to the event will be in the show notes as well, so you can see it there. But yeah, is there anything else you would like to mention while you're on the podcast?
I guess just while I'm on here, well, first of all, thank you for having me and for, you know, giving us this platform, and thank you for being a volunteer and also a generous donor to our auction, several years running, I believe. And, you know, for people who are interested.
Yeah, so speaking of which, not to interrupt, but yeah, one thing I was actually going to say before, and we got, you know, sidetracked, which is easy to do on the podcast, is one thing leads to another, but of course, in the silent auction, at the event, you will have access to a group chess lesson for up to 10 children or adults, you know, with your shoe. So that and many other great items, of course.
Yeah, we're excited. I feel like people are always really excited about that item. So we're happy to be able to include it again. And, you know, for those interested in learning more about us, our website is pawsny.org, and on social media, we're at pawsny. So encourage people to look us up and find us. We do a lot on Instagram especially, but also Facebook. So checking us out there if you're on those platforms.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, and certainly, you know, be in touch. You know, and lastly, if anyone wants to potentially, you know, reach out to you directly you know, to learn how they could be a little bit more involved with the organization, is there a way people can do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone is welcome to email me directly. That's great. My email address is rachel.herman@pawsny.org, and it's Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L .herman, H-E-R-M-A-N @pawsny.org.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you for your time, Rachel, and look forward to seeing you at the gala in a few weeks.
Great. Thank you so much, Evan. Great to see you.
My pleasure.
Bye.